Folks, it is time to talk about one of my absolute favorite topics, snacks. Japanese snacks, specifically. You know, ever since I was a young lad who discovered the world of Japanese snacks, I've been obsessed with their adorable packaging, quirky vibes, and the incredible flavors that you just cannot find in U.S. supermarkets. That is why teaming up with our sponsor, Boxu, a Japanese snack subscription box, has been an absolute blast. Because these snacks aren't just your average grocery store finds. Every month, Boxu delivers over 20 unique treats straight from Japan. Plus, they include a handy guide filled with info about each snack and Japanese culture. Snacking and learning, literally my two favorite things, and I'm going to take a wild guess that those are two things you enjoy as well. Oh, and did I mention that each box ships free from Japan straight to your doorstep? It's incredible. And these snacks are so special, okay? One of them that I just cannot get out of my mind, they have this white chocolate strawberry. It's like a freeze-dried strawberry that is somehow injected with white chocolate. So it is both simultaneously strawberry and white chocolate. I cannot even describe to you what this tasted like. I have never had a textural or taste sensation like it. You gotta try it. And my favorite thing about Boxu, besides the amazing snacks, is that they support small, family-run businesses in Japan. Boxu has sourced your treats by working with over 245 small makers in Japan, helping out their businesses and helping to preserve their traditions. So if you love Japanese snacks as much as I do, or if you know someone who does, you have got to try out Boxu. Right now, you can use the code Factually for $15 off your first order on Boxu.com. That's Factually for $15 off your first order on Boxu.com. And let me know what you think of that strawberry. It is seriously good.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Hey, everyone. Adam here. You know, in addition to Factually, I host a bonus podcast only available on Stitcher Premium. And it is called, in a hilarious bit of title writing, if I do say so myself, Questions and Adam. Get it? Okay, you'll love it. You're about to hear one of my very favorite episodes with my friend, Rhea Butcher. You can find the rest of these episodes exclusively on Stitcher Premium. For a free month of listening, go to stitcher.com/premium, select a monthly plan, and enter the code FACT. So, without further ado, here is my conversation with Rhea Butcher. Folks, I'm honored to say that the podcast is sponsored this week by The Washington Post. If you're a Factually listener, you're already a person who aims to stay informed, aware, and engaged. But let me bring you in on a little secret. Beside the fantastic guests I have on this show, the number one way that I stay engaged is through reading the news like The Washington Post. Their journalists bring you the facts and provide clarity about what's happening on Capitol Hill, the economy, climate change, foreign policy, and everything else that I and you care about. You know, here on Factually, we love to go deep on topics, and The Washington Post helps me and helps you go deeper on the news that matters most to you. That's why I start my days by warming up my brain by reading great articles from some of the best journalists out there in The Post. In fact, many of my favorite past guests on this show, like Taylor Lorenz and David Weigel, have contributed to The Washington Post. That's how good their journalists are. You know, I've also found that adding the Washington Post app to the home screen on my phone has been a great way to cut my social media time. Instead of scrolling through social media on the bus, I get to learn more about the world around me. It is absolutely incredible and makes that commute time so much more enjoyable and fruitful. I also love the Post's newsletters, like The 7, which is a quick commute read that they send each weekday morning and is also available as a podcast. I even signed up to get the Post's For You newsletter, which sends me my very own personalized roundup of stories every evening based on my interests in reading history. So if all of that sounds good to you, well, now is the time to sign up for The Washington Post.
Go to WashingtonPost.com/factually to subscribe for just 50 cents a week for your first year. That is 80% off their typical offer. So this is truly a steal. Once again, that is WashingtonPost.com/factually to subscribe for just 50 cents a week for your first year.
Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples. You know, I never used to have allergies, but then suddenly in my 30s, I started getting walloped with them every single spring. I'll step outside on a beautiful day, ready to hop on the bus or head down to the podcast studio, and suddenly I have a runny nose, scratchy eyes, and it makes it pretty hard to have a conversation with our guests when I am so bogged down and distracted with allergies. Well, luckily for those of us who live with those symptoms, which now includes me, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease. So when I've got a big interview with a big guest, I look for relief with Claritin D. In as little as 30 minutes, I'm refreshed, I'm renewed, and I no longer sound like some kind of cartoon duck. So if you are ready to live life as if you don't have allergies, it is time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. You can find Claritin D at your pharmacy counter, and you don't even need a prescription. So go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. That's Claritin.com. Use as directed.
Folks, I am so thrilled to tell you about today's sponsor, Delete Me, because it is a service that I wholeheartedly stand behind and have used myself for years. As a Factually listener, you're well aware of my dedication to online privacy, and no tool has been more useful to me in protecting my privacy and the privacy of the people I care about than Delete Me. Here's the tough truth. Our data is out there. Our phone numbers, addresses, and the names of our family members are in the nooks and crannies of the internet. These are sites called data brokers, and they make money by taking all of your publicly available data and putting it on the internet where anyone with a credit card can buy it. These are real sites. This is not the dark web. There are hundreds of them across the internet. Now, here's the deal. Every single one of these sites has an opt-out. You could go opt out of every single one of them if you wanted, if you knew the names of all these hundreds of sites, and if you had an infinite amount of time, but you don't, right? Well, guess what? Delete Me has that time because they do it for you. Their teams of experts take on this overwhelming task and shoulder it for you. They work tirelessly to hunt down every single site that has your data and eliminate it from that site. Within just 7 days, you'll receive a comprehensive report of everywhere they found your data and everywhere that they are removing it. And a lot of people need this service. A staggering 41% of Americans are vulnerable to online harassment, from doxing to scams to even identity theft. So don't let yourself fall prey to these dangers. Don't give the bad guys a leg up by keeping your data out on the internet where they can get it. Instead, protect yourself with Delete Me. And I repeat, I cannot recommend this service enough. It really works. And that is why I signed up my entire family for it, to keep them safe. And get this, you can get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/Adam and use promo code Adam at checkout. That's joindeleteme.com/Adam, code Adam.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable.
Sure.
I don't know the truth. I don't know the way. I don't know what to think. I don't know what to say. Yeah, but that's all right. Yeah, that's okay. I don't know anything.
Rhea Butcher, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, Adam Conover, thank you so much for having me. It's so good to be here.
Oh, well, you're here on my new Stitcher Premium show, and I always like to ask the guests how they like the title. The title of the show is Questions and Adam. What do you think?
I think my
Q&A.
Myers, I like it. I like it. Questions and Adam. Okay, sure.
I like the title.
Up and Adam, it's not, you know?
It's not so bad it's good. It's so good it's bad. That's how I feel about that title.
Yeah, I get you. I understand. Yeah, it's right in that quadrant.
You do a wonderful podcast. Okay, so you've been on Adam ruins everything many times.
Many times.
My sibling.
Yes.
Rhea Butcher, a superstar, public defender.
Yeah.
Are Rhea Butcher and Adam related continues to be one of the top Google autocomplete results for my name. If you type in Adam Conover, you'll see people asking Rhea Butcher.
Wow. That's really funny. Do people still ask you about it? Because people have stopped asking me about it, I feel like.
People do still ask. Yeah, they do.
That's funny.
And I what grant great that casting. I made it confusing because I put my real mom and dad on the show.
Yeah, but who was then my mom and dad fake on the show. So really confusing for people.
And you were in the same episode as them.
Yes. So and they were like, your parents and my parents, not my parents, also my parents, you know?
And my real sister got mad about it because she was like, my real mom and dad are on the show. Why am I not on the show?
Everybody but me is in the show.
Yeah. And I feel I don't have a good answer for her.
Yeah. I mean, did she want to have like a full season arc as a public defender? Did your sister want to be word perfect?
That was my favorite arc that we ever did on the show. And you did play my favorite recurring character that we had.
I really enjoyed it. And I mean, I feel like the lifespan of this for me, at least, is a minimum of 5 years. And that's being very conservative, like honestly 10, just because the show is so great and so inherently rewatchable. It doesn't, to me, it's timeless in its information. You know what I mean? Like, there's not going to be, at least we're not going to see it, which is fine.
Well, none of the problems that we talked about on the show have improved since we made the show.
No, not to the level that it would be in conflict with the information that you're getting. But even if they did, here's the thing though, Adam, even if they do, which they will, and again, might not be in our lifetime, which is fine. That's why we do it. You could still see the information. Like, the information is still valuable, you know? So anyway, my whole point is people still bring that up. Like, I work on a show, Good Trouble. And one of the executive producers, who's also like the DP, I don't know the exact title, but anyway, he was like, man, I got a lot of points with my kids because they found out I'm working with you and you are on Adam Ruins Everything. It's just like this fun gift that keeps on giving, you know?
That's wonderful. I love that. There are so many people who, a lot of times when we have to, because sometimes I'm trying to get, you know, an expert onto, here's a little behind the scenes on Factually, try to get an expert onto Factually and they don't know who I am, but they go ask their kids. And if their kids know, they do the show because every parent wants to look cool to their kids.
Oh,
kids.
Wow.
And so that has gotten me so many experts. So I'm always like, you want to take a picture? You want me to record a voicemail or whatever? Because I want to make these adults. I want to make these, like, you know, 60-year-old academics seem cool to their teenage children.
What a gift.
A mission of mine. Okay, well, let's talk about this. Let's talk about questions. With questions and Adam. So a question I always get, and we have gotten, and I'm going to put to you, this is my number one most common question that I get, is people ask me, what product do I use in my hair?
Yeah.
And people want to know this question from you too, because you also have very good hair. So tell me, what product, Rhea Butcher, do you use in your hair?
People ask me this question all the time, Adam, so it's great to relate to you. Just as a side note, we both get our haircut by the same person.
Yeah.
So that is like a baseline sort of, you know, this is scientific procedure here.
I think we talked about this when I was on your podcast, your wonderful podcast, Three Swings, about baseball.
Oh, thank you.
But let's talk about it on my own platform.
Yeah.
When I moved to Los Angeles, you were one of the first people I met because we did a stand-up show at like my second week in L.A., and I said, you have great hair. I need a new barber. And you were like, go see my barber, Pony, at his wonderful place, Folklore Salon. And I went, and Pony has cut my hair for like 6 years now.
Yeah, it's an important starting spot, is what I would say. And you don't have to spend a lot of money, but you do have to develop a relationship. I have learned that in my, 10th ninth year of having my hair cut by Pony. It really does pay to have somebody who understands your hair. I know that seems very silly, but it's not. Because, like, I have a ton of cowlicks in my hair. Like, he just knows how my hair operates, so he can cut according to that. So, that being said, I used to use a ton of pomade. I used to use a combo of, like, Imperial barber products, pomade, and then light hairspray. Like, I used to use all that stuff. I had terrible skin problems. So, now what I use, and I've found it to be even more effective, is a very simple hair powder. That's it.
Whoa.
It's just like a styling powder. I use the brand Big Sexy Hair, and I'm sure there's better versions, that, like healthier, more sustainable versions. Way better names for sure. And that is what I use on a pretty regular basis when I need to style my hair, because it doesn't, it's not messy. You don't need a lot, and I have very thick hair, so if I put too much stuff in my hair, then I end up with just messed up hair, and then I need to like wash it and start all over again, which I can do very easily. I can put too much shit in there, so I don't have that problem with the powder. Also, the benefit, if I don't wash my hair before I go to bed, I don't wake up with a greasy mess. You know, I just wake up with a frizzed out mess, which is preferable, honestly. Mm. I enjoy starting with that. So that's what I use. What do you use, Adam?
I use... Well, first of all, I just buy whatever Pony tells me to buy. I go in there and Pony's like, do you like this? And I use it. And I'm fully aware that this is a scam on the part of Pony. Or
sure,
not really on his part. But like what happens is, like, you know, the it's very clear how this works. The product companies come in and they say, you know, give us the shelf space and give this to your consumer. I don't know exactly what the terms of the deal are, but it's clear. Like because like the first year he was always recommending me Imperial gel pomade.
Yep.
And then he suddenly started recommending me a different thing instead, which was much better. And I was like, okay, he was just recommending me whatever they told him to. But at the same time, it's like, what am I going to do? Like, this is the expert. So I use now the most thing he recommended me, the recent thing he recommended me, I really do like. It's Hans de Foucault is the brand. And it's like, what is it called? It's like a matte kind of paste.
Is it a clay?
It has some grit to it.
Yeah, that's what I use for on-camera stuff, like on Good Trouble. I don't know what the brand is, but I think you can basically find whichever version of it that you like, smells-wise and looks-wise and stuff. But now I use a styling clay as opposed to like a pomade gel.
This has a clay texture. What I use is one called Quicksand, which is almost invisible once it goes in your hair. They have other ones that are a little bit heavier. And here's the description. It says, craving that beachy textured hairstyle with high hold. So that's sort of what it does. One part styling wax, one part dry shampoo, it says. But here's the thing. Here's the thing. People don't know, like they say, Adam, what product do you use in your hair? As though that is the answer to the question, why does my hair look the way it does?
Yeah.
And that is not the answer.
Right, which is why I led with... You got to have a person cutting your hair that knows what your hair is doing.
Yes. And also when I am on television, that is like basically special effects hair. Like one to two people working on your hair for, like, I'm sure when you're on camera, at least half an hour.
You're
sitting there and they're just doing your hair. And then in between every shot, they come up to you and they fix your hair.
Well, I will say not anymore. Have you shot anything in the pandemic?
Oh, no, not yet.
They don't do all those things. Like, I just want to add, because this is like, you know, behind the scenes question and answer. People are interested in facts and stuff. Usually, yes, that's the case. So if people are watching Adam Ruins Everything, people were coming in and, you know, re-Adaming both of our hairs between every move we made. But now you get it done at the beginning of the day. That's pretty much it. You know, like if you're shooting like... You know, if you're shooting the same stuff over but if I'm doing one scene and it's quick and I'm up in like a couple setups or something, I'm not getting retouches on makeup or hair. Like they don't even come to set. No last looks. There are literally no last looks anymore, Adam. Like you're expected to do your own touches and stuff.
Wow.
Which is pretty wild. Yeah, it's wild. So I'm really curious to see what TV that is produced in this era looks like compared to everything around it.
Yeah.
Because HD is
a lot more flyaways.
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, I'm like always checking. Like, there's often I'm in a scene with women with longer hair, and I'm always like looking at them like, do you know how nuts it would be to like put in a great performance and then realize at the end of it you have a hair in your mouth? I'm always like, Shannon, look at me. Look at me. Okay, you're good. You know, like I would be so embarrassed.
It drives me crazy when I see, when I watch television and someone's lit from behind and they got a big fly away. I'm like, where, what?
I know.
That's just
because
from being on set. If I wasn't working, I wouldn't know that. I wouldn't have that awareness of that.
Of course. Yeah.
But I also don't mind it. I don't know. I love, one of my favorite things that happened in the last 10 years was the Starbucks cup in the Game of Thrones scene.
Oh yeah. And the water bottle too.
Yeah, I love it. I love it so much because I love that even on the biggest show. First of all, yeah. I love the fact that, of course, they're all standing around with Starbucks like everybody is on every, like they're in a fantasy land. No, they're standing around.
5 minutes ago, everybody was just standing around with coffee. Yeah.
Yeah. And in fact, what you do, this is what people don't realize about TV sets. When you watch somebody, you watch the most beautiful actor standing in the most dramatic scene, the most high budget thing. Wherever they are standing, there is a water bottle at their feet.
Oh,
they
yeah.
just had a drink of water and put it on the floor. Yeah. Maybe they had it to an assistant, but I just put it on the floor. There's like trash around. There's like a cable just to their left.
Oh,
there's
yeah.
like crap everywhere.
There's somebody on their phone with their back to them 5 feet away. You know what I mean? Like that's it's always, there's always somebody right there. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Like every actor has always just like taken a little sip of Starbucks like right before the shot, and it leaked its way into the fictional world, and hundreds of people looked at that shot before.
So you know, many like, people. That is what baffles me, Adam. And
I love it.
Not only did hundreds of people look at that shot, and like it's also just like humans are very fallible and we're very limited. Even if you put 100 sets of eyeballs onto the same thing, you will miss it because we're so, it's so ubiquitous. Even in that world, you know, like to the point where it just fades into the background. And like, also not only did hundreds, like literally at least 200 eyeballs look at that thing. Mm-hmm. How many eyeballs on the set?
Yeah.
How many eyeballs on the set? How many people on the set just didn't see it, you know? And like on something like that, you just think it's so much money. But you know, I go to work, that stuff happens at work where somebody goes oop and like, you know, runs in, or like you just forget you have your phone in your pocket and it's like you can't.
Yeah,
like even something as silly as that, it's like you can't have your phone in your, it's like, yeah, it's wild. It's, that was a wild thing. And then they just deleted it.
You want to have it,
everybody found it, and then they just erased it and put it right back up.
No, they should have left it. I think they should have left it because it's such a wonderful pull back to reality of making the show. Like, you know, when you're working in TV, you're aware that the fantasy world is fiction because there's a base reality here where you're like, I need, like, every single person on that set is like, I am tired. I need Starbucks. I am sweaty.
Yeah.
I feel like shit. Like, again, every single person you ever see on TV, Their costume in the back is held together with safety pins. You know, like Daenerys, she looks amazing from the front. From the back, she's got safety pins holding her costume together.
You know,
like the hair was just pinned up really quickly, and she's sweating. She has to pee, and she's, you know, hasn't eaten, or she just ate and she ate so much for lunch that now she's really full and gross. You know, every single person on set is just going, I just have to hold it together for the 30 seconds of this shot.
Right.
And then we can move on. So they take their sip of coffee and they put it down and they get safety pinned and they like, and then they do the shot. And that's the reality of that is the real reality of when you look at the people on screen. And I love that that real base reality leaked all the way through
100%.
To people's final experience of the fantasy world. That's such a beautiful thing. This is not what I intended to talk about.
But this is what's fun. Because this is making me think of something else, Adam, which is similar, not the same, but similar to that. How, like, in Raiders of the Lost Ark, how the newer versions, they have, like, erased out the reflection of the Cobra Snake, if you remember, when Indiana falls into is thrown back into the snake pit after they've gotten the Ark out of the out of the it's not the, I forget what it's called. Anyway, he and Marion have got it. And so he's thrown back down into the snake pit, falls, turns around, and there's a cobra right in his face. Stunning bit of cinematography, stunning bit of storytelling, like setting you up for that moment. And like, there was plexiglass in between Harrison Ford and the cobra snake. Like, such a simple special effect. Nowadays, mm-hmm. we would just CGI the snake. It would look so real, blah, blah, blah. That's not what, it was 1980. So
yeah.
That's what they did. So there's a magical realism in there. And then to me, the fact that you can see the reflection, which I didn't see the first time I saw it because I was a kid and I was like into it. And then yeah. my mom waited and told me and was like, and then if you watch, when we watch it again, look at that. And then that becomes its own story within the thing, you know?
Yeah.
And so similar to how you were saying, like, I wish they would have kept it in. It's like, I miss that they took that out because it was like a little story for me and a memory for me and a little, it's like its own extra thing in the movie. And like, to me, perfection, it's almost like you said with the hair stuff, like you can't just get the hair stuff and then your hair does what it wants. It's like, it is a collaboration. And so to have a collaboration, have these little imperfections in it is what then creates a collaboration with the audience, with time, with experience, like all of those things. And like, that is sort of what I miss when we start getting into movies that are just like purely CGI'd and you can make it do whatever you want. There's no goofs or mess ups to read yeah. on IMDb. It's just like, what was the box office? What was the budget? Cool. Great. See you later. Like, it's yeah. just not fun anymore, you know?
Yeah.
Or as no, fun.
The interaction with the reality is like part of the story and the physicality of it. And, you know, it's I've always been hoping that we're going to return to realer special effects. And I think we are yeah. a little bit. Like, one of my favorite things, a lot of people have a lot of opinions about the Star Wars sequels. One of the things I liked about them was they had a lot of physical effects and a lot of physical
totally.
Props. Like, the little droid, the little basketball droid, is a physical prop, not a CGI prop. And it looks so much better.
You mean BB-8? Are you referring to BB-8 as a basketball?
Yeah. Well, that's why
well,
called
I love
BB-8.
It. No. I mean,
it looks like a basketball.
Basketball.
It's a physical prop that they physically moved around. It's like, it's, yeah. it's practically out of, you know, in the original Star Wars, it's all Jim Henson, you know? It's,
yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah.
All that sort of thing. And guess what? It really does look realer, you know, because
oh,
it
yeah.
is real and it has physical imperfections to it. And there's, you know, I'm
you
not
can
like,
feel it.
Oh, CGI is terrible, but
no.
Like, I
it's
think
it's gotten so much better.
Yeah.
CGI has, but
it has gotten much better. But there is still no replacement for the messiness of reality. And this is not mm-hmm. like a film versus digital thing, because that
no.
I'm not even on that. It's like, when things are physical in the real world, there's so much more dimension and information to them than something that you can create. And I love things that are digitally creative. I love video games and stuff like mm-hmm. that. But I am so like, I thought at the beginning of the pandemic, I would play more video. I'd be happy to play so many video games. And now I don't want to play any video games
yeah.
because all of my existence is digitally mediated right now. And it's like, yeah. it feels like there's a paucity of information and stuff and things to do in it. What I want is the real world. I want
right.
to go out and, you know, go like sit on a bus and like, you know, it's kind of dirty and grimy in a very specific way that bus is and no other bus in the entire world is, you know, that,
yeah.
like I want that experience. And so maybe, I don't know, my hope is after, you know, people are able to go out again, that we'll have a simultaneous society-wide refocusing on the benefits of reality and in-person experience
mm-hmm.
over digital substitutes. I don't know. What do you think about that?
I mean, I think that's absolutely true. I mean, nothing ever happens 100% or 0%. You know what I mean? So like the entire population is not going to have the same experience of it. But I cannot imagine that going through this pandemic specifically is not going to have, I mean, it's obviously going to have effects that we wouldn't have otherwise experienced, right? If it hadn't happened.
Mm-hmm.
But we were already beginning to get to a point where the like immersion in sort of second screen experience, like all that, so like everything is mediated by digital, like you said. And so I do feel like there will be a large portion of the population, or the portion of the experience of the population, I guess I should say, where the need for direct experience, direct physical experience of each other and our world will be cranked up, you know, because I just think people are, you know, it's funny to me, like I consider it and I ponder it when I'm like washing the dishes and stuff. And I think about how, you know, like I feel as though through the like Obama years, we were sort of like lamenting the like artisanal hipster and all this stuff, and like not unwarranted. However, you know, like there's a shop in my neighborhood that is like hipster and all this stuff. But what I realized is, oh, it's a general store. And because of all this progress, because of all this stuff, we don't have general stores anymore that I can just walk into and there's bulk products and I don't have to buy a plastic thing. You know, like my willingness to just buy plastic all the time is ridiculous, you know, like, and I know this doesn't relate to the, but it's like, it's all related to me, you know, like where we just got so mechanicalized with everything and everything is just like numbers on a screen. And it's like, I think people want to experience the world. I think we ultimately know deeply in our soul, that is what we've been given. We've been given all of this, but I just can't imagine that, you know, VR is where we're all going to want to live now. Like that's what everybody thought. And it's like, well, I think it's just part of it. I think VR is just like a possibility. Yeah. You know,
I want VR. I mean, I have a VR headset. I want to use VR even less than I did before.
Right. Yeah.
Because like at least in, you know, you know, when I'm stuck in my house. And the reason, again, is not to poo-poo digital experience. And I don't even like the division of saying, oh, there's a difference between reality and the internet. They're both reality.
No, they're both reality. Yeah, exactly.
But like, okay, so I think a fundamental thing that humanity does is we create experiences for each other that are mediated and specific, you know? So it's like you can go eat, you know, a piece of fruit that you picked in the forest, or you can eat like a candy bar that a human made for you that appeals to all the other, all the same, you know, senses, but in this very specific way that's designed to elicit a specific reaction, right? And that, for instance, is what a video game is. It's a whole world that someone has created for you to have fun in. And that's extremely fun to like go explore, you know, someone else's mind, someone else's idea of what a fun experience would be. But it's fundamentally limited because, you know, that's what it is. It's this sort of narrowing of, we're going to give you a lot of some narrow stuff that we think, because we are also humans, you'll enjoy. The world, when you walk out into it, isn't that. It's just randomness. It's crazy shit happening. It's like, it's not for you. You know, you go out in the woods and it's not like made to design. It's not made, you know, it's not designed to elicit some specific reaction from you. It's lumpy. It's not always efficient. It's like, you know, but it's also serendipitous. Yeah. Things happen that you don't expect. And, you know, that is the experience of, that's why, you know, bring back to real life special effects. Like you can't get every single little thing right. That's what's good about it, because it's happening in the real world. Ooh, another good example of this is like, I learned like in pinball competitions, right? I like pinball.
Do you know how much I love pinball?
You love pinball? Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. Changed my life. Pinball changed my life. So, yes. Oh, just wanted to put that in there.
I didn't know pinball changed your life. How did it change your life?
Oh, yeah. Huge. I started playing it with a really good friend. Not only did, like, our relationship grow and evolve around it, but I just really loved... To me, pinball is... There's so much possibility in it. And you can just walk up to a machine and you can... put a quarter in, obviously this is a metaphor, but because it's more than that now, but, and you can just hit the flippers and just make the ball go around and it's so much fun. Or you can go like, oh, what do I do here? And what does slowly, the game want me to do? But surely you can start to, you can do one thing over and over and over and over and over and over again and win the game. Or you can do one thing and see what that leads to and see, oh, it's like this world that can unfold in front of you the more you do it. And so I just really enjoyed that experience of, it was like it's like a time travel thing for me. Cause when I was a kid, no concept of pinball, nobody showed me how it worked other than you hit these buttons and then the flippers go. So I had no idea there was like a point, you know, or like a strategy to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it was just like a fun, loud thing. And it was old, you know, because arcade games were new then, or like stand up games. And so now it's like, oh, wait, this has like a whole world to it. And I didn't know. And now I'm open to it. And, you know, there's like a beauty in the art and the design. And of course, you know, there's community around it and like all kinds of stuff. And so anyway, it's just a lot of fun. And like, to me, it's very similar to baseball. I have a similar relationship to it, which is that I love it. And then I love sharing that love with other people. Yeah. And if and when they get on board, it's just very rewarding. Not because I've converted somebody, but because we get to share something together. Like it feels, they're very kindred spirits in my world.
That is how I feel. Well, I love pinball and I love
all
games.
This is why we're siblings, Adam.
This is why we're siblings. I'm a game guy and I grew up loving video games, and then I was introduced to pinball in college. And what I love about pinball specifically is that it's physical as opposed to video games. It is one of the very few games, you know, in terms of a designed game, not like baseball, but a designed experience, like a video game or a board game or something like that, where you're really manipulating the movement of physical objects in this constrained space. And the physicality means that weird shit happens. Like sometimes when you're playing pinball.
I mean, it sounds like you just described baseball, just to say.
but baseball is a little different because it is a competition between multiple people that has rules. As opposed to someone will come out with a new pinball machine that says, okay, what if we have the player do this? What if we have the player do that?
Yeah, yeah.
It's fundamentally an experience about fun and novelty.
Have you checked out Banana Ball, Adam? Because that is actually sort of creating the little tangent world experience that you're talking about. And I don't know, I don't have all the rules memorized yet, but there's a minor league team in Savannah, Georgia named the Bananas, and their owner, president, I forget what he is, GM, invented like a new version of baseball called Banana Ball, where it's fundamentally restructuring the game in a way to make it more fun and exciting. And it looks like way more fun and exciting. And because each inning is a game, essentially, you're playing to win the inning. And then at the end, the team with the most innings wins, as opposed to the team with the most runs through nine innings wins.
This is great.
The rule that I enjoy the most that I've seen on Instagram that is the most fun is when you get walked, you run the bases to see how far you can get before the entire field throws the ball around the horn. I mean, that's the wrong phrase, but they have to throw the ball between all of them. And then wherever you are, that's where you get to end up. So lots of triples out of walks, you know?
That's great.
Right. I mean, it's just making the game like faster, like pinball. It's just adding those kinds of things where like crazy shit can happen. So I'm just, you know.
Well, so it does apply. It does apply because, I'm sorry. This comparison I want to make does apply because I'm coming to my point about pinball.
Yes. Sorry, Adam.
It's fine. When you play pinball, weird shit can happen. Like as you're playing, the ball takes a weird carom. Like 90% of the time it's the same, but the ball takes a weird carom and it hits the glass and bounces, or it gets stuck under a trap door or something. Right. And one of the things I love is that in competitive pinball, all that stuff is real. Like if you like in a video game, if there's a bug, you'd say, okay, you know what? That doesn't count. Let's start over. In pinball, if the ball gets stuck, pinball is a physical game. Mm-hmm. That's part of your run of that game. Like there is something specific and weird about a real ball bouncing around that cannot be duplicated digitally because unpredictable things can happen. Mm-hmm. The same is true of baseball that like the, you know, baseball, all the stadiums are different, you know, all the ball can take a weird carom that, strange shit.
Off of a rock. There was a infield ground ball like that. It literally slithered out to the outfield. I think it was in Minnesota or I can't remember where.
We've literally shared three times that weird things happened since the beginning of the baseball season, which was a couple days ago.
Oh, yeah. It just started all kinds of weird shit, you know? So like everything, the humidity in the air changes the game. You know what I mean? So like you can lose a baseball game to the weather. you yeah. know, like, and then to the other team. But you can hit five home runs that don't carry out that on any other day would and lose the game. Yeah. So similar. I see your differences, but I feel there's more similarities than differences.
No, you're right. You're right.
Because you're like right. Pinball is totally mechanical, and so is baseball. Because if you think about baseball and you think about the way people talk about pitching and hitting and throwing, it's all about mechanics.
Yes. Well, this is a good place to go to our plug. Tell us about your baseball podcast. So,
it is a great place. What a beautiful segue, Adam. My podcast is called Three Swings. It's a podcast about baseball and other things. I do talk about other stuff on there. So if you're like, I hate baseball, I don't want to listen to baseball for an hour, that's not the only thing I talk about. So I talk about baseball. I talk about different kinds of baseball, like banana ball, like women's NCAA softball. Like I talk about all kinds of stuff. And it's just from a different, you know, lens than the typical data-driven sabermetrics, ESPN, MLB Network, even, you know, Ringer stuff, where it's just not the same. I talk about the social aspects of the game.
Yes.
All kinds of stuff. And also, I'm not sure when this is coming out, but it doesn't matter. The most recent episode, to me, I had a guest on my podcast named Iman, who is a displaced resident of Echo Park Lake, and he yeah. shared his story, his experience of that community, and then also, you know, the LAPD military occupation by Mitch O'Farrell. So he shared his experience of that on my podcast, which I'm very grateful for. So definitely check at least that episode out, because I want Iman's story to get out there, you know.
Rhea Butcher, thank you so much for being here. This is a delight.
Yeah, it was so great to be here, Adam. Thanks for having me on to talk one question.
Yeah, we had one question. It took us on the whole journey.
Then we just talked about everything.
I appreciate you and your friendship.
Yeah, man, I appreciate you too.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.